Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.
I think it must have been about the fourth year, that we were on 5 days a week. And CBS had presented to the FCC and to the committees of senators and representatives and some people from the Supreme Court and whatnot, their particular system of color reproduction. And so when NBC presented their case, they asked us to go to Washington, and we would do shows in the morning and shows in the afternoon, and then our own regular show at night. I never was more tired in my whole life, and I remember I had to wear a red dress, which I gave away immediately the week was over. I never wanted to see it again. And then we went to New York, and we did the final presentation to the FCC of NBC's color system. And then we did the first coast-to-coast telecast in color from NBC, and we did St. George and the Dragon.
Okay, I'm going to have to run you back real quick, because we'll touch on that in a moment.
All right. And Dave Garraway sat up in the box and did the same thing that Mr. Cross used to do when he did the operas, you know. And Arthur Fiedler was the conductor of the NBC Symphony Orchestra. It was really a great thrill.
All right, let me start by asking you, what was your first association with the entertainment industry?
I worked in radio. And
how did that start?
Well, it started a long time ago in Iowa. I had taught school, and I came back home because I realized that I was not going to be any better teacher than I was at that moment unless I learned a little more myself. And that seemed not to be possible. I wasn't very financially sound at the time, and I just thought, well, there must be something else I can do. And I really didn't know what it was, but I am
what
a great...
What were your parents doing?
My father was an invalid from the time I was very small, and my mother was a mainstay of our household. I went to college for 2 years, and I taught school for four. And my brother is a musician and was at that time with an orchestra, which had a regular program on the radio station there. And so they asked me to sing on one of their broadcasts, and the program director called immediately afterwards and asked if I would come to see him, and I did, and he said, we'd love to have you appear regularly on a program. And in those days, they had a term for the particular kind of program which I performed, and it was really a misnomer if ever there was one, because it was called a sustaining program. And when you don't get any money, there isn't a great deal of sustenance, as you will quite agree. And so I told the gentleman, Mr. Dumond, that I just had to have a job, but a money job. And he said, well, I think we can work something out. So he said, we have 8:30 to 9 open in the mornings, and we'll have a gentleman, Lou Webb, will play piano for you, and you will sing songs, you will read spot announcements. And that seemed like a fairly easy thing. But then I found out that I not only would read the spot announcements, I would have to sell them, and I would also have to write them. And for this, I got the magnificent sum of $10 a week and 10% commission. And the gentleman who owned the station Oh dear, I wish the ERA had been enforced then, because I had the prime example. He was a nice gentleman, but he thought because I really worked, I worked hard, and was out on the street immediately the show was over and took a short lunch and was back on the street again. And I finally was getting around $40 to $45 a week with commissions. And he thought that was too much for a lady to earn, so he put me on a straight salary of $30 a week, and then I didn't work quite as hard. There wasn't that incentive. But I worked at that radio station for about 3 years, and then a gentleman came through my hometown and was at a high school alumnus banquet. And I sang at that, as I had at every bonfire and barn raising for years. And he came to the station the next day and suggested that he would like to bring me to the attention of some friends of his at NBC in Chicago. And I thought it was a very thoughtful gesture for him to make, and I should not have been at all surprised if I hadn't heard from him again. But I did. In the following week, we had a call from NBC asking me to come in for an audition, and I did that. And the following week, they sent me a telegram offering me a staff job at NBC in Chicago. So I went there, and I was with NBC for about 2 years, I guess, and then I went to CBS, and then I was married, and my husband was in the service, so I left Chicago and joined him for about a year. Then I went back to Chicago.
What did he do for a living?
He was a music publisher.
I don't think I ever got what your mother did for a living.
She sewed. And
a seamstress, is that what she did?
And I came back to Chicago and started all over again. And during the war, there was but one television station in Chicago, but who knew about it? Because nobody had any sets or cared anything about it. It was more an experimental thing, and it was taken over by the Navy and used as a radar school. But those of us in radio in Chicago, and people, entertainers who came through Chicago, were asked on occasion to come over and just fill in time, just so they'd have something to take a picture of. And I did that many times, and I stood where I was supposed to stand and spoke when I was supposed to speak. And so I made several friends around the place. And when it was returned to private ownership and people began to think of television is a new and exciting form of advertising, RCA came out to Chicago, and Burr Tillstrom had done some experimental work for them, where he would do little shows and get the attention of people in department stores, and then they would walk past and have their picture taken, you know. And so they came out and met with Burr and suggested that he do an hour a day, 5 days a week, sell television through television, and a great avenue of approach would be one which would appeal to children. And he said he certainly was interested, and he felt that it would be just too difficult a thing to do, even though they were going to have little films and whatnot interspersed in the course of the hour. It still was a thing he just thought he couldn't face by himself, or would rather not. And that if he could find someone to work in front of the stage, it would make it easier, and it would then be worth considering. Mm-hmm. So they cast around for someone who would fit in such a slot.
Do you remember some of the people they thought up? Or
I never heard of them, because they, when they said, suggested me, Burr said, she'd be great. I know mm-hmm. she would. We knew each other, mm-hmm. but not well. I had seen him do little presentations, and I thought he was most talented, mm-hmm. and I liked him as a person. And so they called me and asked if I would come down. Well, I'd done a couple of things on on that very station, and I thought to myself, oh, I just don't want to get involved. And when Captain Eddie said, wouldn't you like to do a television show, Fran? And I said, I don't really think so, Captain Eddie. And he said, well, Fran, this is different. This is for money. I said, well, why don't we just talk it over? So I went down on Friday afternoon, and the people from the agency and the people from RCA were there, and the staff people at the television station. And we discussed what we would do, and agreed that it would certainly be worth a try. And the meeting disbanded. We went our separate ways. And on Monday, I went down to the studio, met Burr at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we went down for coffee and discussed what we would do that afternoon. Went up and went on the air at 4 o'clock, and we worked for 10 years. And that's all the planning that went into it.
Really?
So it just grew. It was a very fortunate meeting of minds. And even beyond that, the physical properties were great, because Burr worked standing up, as you would imagine. And I was just the right height to work in with the stage, so that they could photograph just as they would wish to. If I had been shorter, I would have had to stand on a box. If I'd been any taller, I don't know what we would have done. But we came to think so very much alike that I would think on occasion, I wish Kukla, or I wish Ollie, or whoever would be involved, would say thus or so. It will help whatever plot we had. And no sooner would I have thought that mm-hmm. than one of them would say just exactly what was needed. Mm-hmm. And Burr told me many times that he would think, well, I wish Fran would say this or that, and I would so do. And the only actual rehearsal we had was for music, you know, for levels and things like that, and just become acquainted with whatever we were going to do. We talked over our plan and had almost all the time a climax and a reasonable solution of whatever situation mm-hmm. there was. And Burr, of course, he's a master so far as time is concerned. Time means nothing to me. I don't have any conception of what a minute is, or a second, or 2 seconds. But he just amazed me, because he worked looking at the monitor, he watched the clock, he looked out at me and looked at what he was doing. And I never could quite figure out how he did it, but he did it so well that I just figured if I didn't know how he did it, it really didn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read in some of my books that I have that there really were never any scripts, and that...
Oh, no.
So there was really nothing to save. I mean, like most shows, you'd have a pile of scripts.
Pardon. We had kinescopes that mm-hmm. were made during that, which, as you know, are not the greatest reproductions mm-hmm. in the world. If the sound is good, sometimes the picture is not mm-hmm. always right.
I always hear stories of those things being destroyed or thrown away.
Well, we had all those, and when we lived in New Jersey, I had so much room and in such a perfect place in which to store them that I had all of them there. And then any time that Burr would want one, or many times when people come, we'd run them downstairs. It was fun. Mm-hmm. But when we decided to come out here, I thought, what in heaven's name will I do now with all these kinescopes? Because they'd been so well taken care of and were so readily available to us. Well, I just worried and worried and worried this one day, and the next day Burr called and said that the Museum of History in
there
Chicago,
he is again thinking
wanted them. Mm-hmm. So that's where they are now. I have a few of them, but not many.
But they're in good hands.
Oh, indeed they are, and yeah. We could always get from them anything mm-hmm. that we wanted. Mm-hmm. And then after we closed the 10-year run, Burr was glad to have a little time off, and I had other things that I could do and did do. And then he began to think of a little workshop or a theater, and he wanted to go to New York. And our producer, Miss Zachary, flew to New York to kind of, they had an option on a place, and she was getting close to the deadline, and she wanted to get things settled. And of course, she met with that terrible accident and was killed. So Burr didn't want to do anything for a while, and I could well understand it. And about a year and a half went by, and then we were asked to do a fill-in at NBC, a local show at NBC in New York. And Burr called and asked if I would do it, and I said I would love to. And I wondered if...
What had you done during that period?
Oh, I'd been busy in I was involved in radio again, and then I'd done commercials. I was with Whirlpool, RCA Whirlpool, for 7 years. So I had, and some other, then I did it, I had other things that came up. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered if I would feel exactly the same way. I just wondered if the intervening time would have changed anything. Mm-hmm. And so it was the Monday after Easter Sunday that we started, and he and I had luncheon on Easter, and they wanted to take some pictures, and I didn't want to look at Kukla or Ollie then. I wanted to wait till I got in the studio and everything was
just right. Yeah.
And so I went to makeup early in the morning, and I came into the studio, and Ollie was up on stage, and as I came in the studio, he said, "Francis," and I knew it was just the same. Nothing had changed, and everything was just as easy as it had always been. And during the different times that we've had occasion to work together, for instance, the CBS Children's Film Festival, we acted as hosts for that, and I loved it. We enjoyed it. Of course, we didn't have the time to do many things that we did before, but we did a series for public television.
It was delightful to see you turn up still.
And then they brought back some of those things, and we made some new ones to fill in, and that ran for a while. And Burr, in the last year, did a wonderful thing. This great gentleman, Cyril Richard, you know, was in Chicago and became ill, and Burr stepped in and did the same thing that Hermione Gingold does here in Sondheim, Side by Side. And then he went to New York and did it. Mm-hmm. And Madame Oglepuss came out, and Beulah, and even Fletcher Rabbit got in the act, and it was just wonderful. I wish so much that I could have seen him. I just know he was great. I read the reviews, and I believe
where is he based now?
Well, he has a home in Chicago, and then he has a place up in Saugatuck, Michigan. And he'll be there most of the summer. He just comes into Chicago when he wants to. But there's a beautiful artist colony very close to Saugatuck. And he goes out there, and then there's a college not too far from Holland, Michigan, I think it is. And he goes over and works with some of the young people there in the drama department. And he's never at a loss for something to do. There's always something that interests him.
Towards the end of this year, I'm going to be traveling, and I'll be for this book. So I'll be hopefully be able to meet with him.
Oh, I hope you will. I know he'd very much enjoy.
If I can leave you a copy of my letter, and then you could forward it to him,
I'll probably see Burr within the next couple of weeks because I'm leaving Sunday.
Oh, great.
And I certainly will tell him about it.
Just forward my letter along and tell him about what I'm doing.
I'll do that.
Yeah, because it'd be nice to get both ends. Well, I heard also that you never really liked to look behind the theater.
I never did.
Burr at work, because it kind of broke the illusion kind of for
you. It just wasn't that. They just, when I spoke with them, they were very real. It never seemed odd at all to me to be carrying on a conversation with Fletcher Rabbit. He made very good sense.
Can you go through the characters that Burr had and just describe them as if you were to describe friends to me?
Yes.
Tell me their personalities.
Well,
what Kukla, you liked and didn't like about them.
Kukla was the impresario of the Kuklapolitan Theater. He had very good judgment on things. He was very kind and very gentle. He could be driven just so far, and then he would have to blow up at Ollie, because Ollie would get really out of line sometimes. And
is Cecil kind of like Burr is as a person?
Cecil?
Kukla? Kukla, I'm thinking of Clamp.
Well, he I think represents a good part of Burr, because he loves good music and good books, good art, so does Burr. And Ollie is, he's just dear, just love him, but he just goes off on such wild tangents, and he accepts every acclaim that is given him as, why shouldn't they, you know? He's kind of like people would like to be sometimes and just can't, but nothing.
A little too innocent?
No, not that. He just, if he gets a wild idea and it doesn't make sense at all, but he wants to do it, he does it. Mm-hmm. And he can get away with it. And I, of course, love him. And Beulah Witch, I just adore. She's the most resourceful woman I ever met. She comes from North Carolina, and she went to Witch Normal, and she was in a traveling troupe of Hansel and Gretel, and she decided she was getting typed, so she left that. And she saw the great and wonderful future in electronics, and so she joined up with us, and Mama comes to visit every now and again, and on Halloween I get to wear a special hat and get to fly with the girls and from Witch Normal sorority, and we have our own, we are very kind to Madame Oglepuss, but we kind of smile at each other every now and again. Madame Oglepuss is the musical director, and I like to think of her as an older woman, and the field is narrowing for me, so I think of her a lot. And Colonel Cracky was an old actor, and I don't know how he came to us, but we're very happy that he did. And Fletcher Rabbit, of course, he's the official mailman. And Fletcher Rabbit came from Washington, D.C. His mother was campaigning for women's suffrage, and she is just so caught up with the cause, she doesn't know it's long since been won, and she's still on the road somewhere. Fletcher hadn't heard from her lately. He works very hard and very closely with E.B., the Easter Bunny at the eggplant. And he's, of course, very busy during the Easter season. And he also goes around and lectures to young rabbits to save gardens and not eat shrubs and things like that. And he has a lovely garden himself, and he loves everything that grows so that he just can't think that we'd ever eat any of those things, because you're just supposed to grow them, I guess, and look at them. That, because he loves plants just that much. And Werner Worm is, he's a new character. And
when you say new, you mean,
well, he hasn't been
public
with us.
Television
hasn't he hasn't he's been well, he's been on television, yes, but he just came to live with us lately. And then we have our little skunk, and he lives in the window seat, because there are a lot of Field and Stream, old Field and Stream magazines in there. He loves them, so that's where he lives. And Mercedes is a little girl who spends a great deal of time with us. She goes back to her parents at times, but she has been with us a lot. Well, Alfred, this is a house guest, and I guess he just, that's good. Just lie down and be a good dog. That's good.
Your dog, or you say?
No, he's a house guest. He's here with my friend. His name is Alfred, and I love him.
Male or female?
Male. He's just a darling. Best dog. And let me see. I hope I didn't leave anyone out. Oh! We have Mrs. Buff Orpington, Rosemary, and she comes over every once in a while, brings us some eggs, and we have there's a lovely cow, and she doesn't come in often, but she's there. And I think that just about, Cecil Bill is our union representative, and he has his own, he understands everything we say, and we've come to be able to understand everything he says, but his language is Tui talk, and he just prefers it to ours, and so we've never tried to change him in any way. We're very fond of him. He helps. He's a great help to Kukla when they build things. Cecil Bill is always there, just can do anything. And I think that's about it.
It's quite a few. You speak of them as if they're real.
Well, they are. They are very.
You mentioned about the ball catcher incident, mm-hmm. where you caught the ball catcher. Were there other incidences like that happened that were particularly, because you speak of talking about a show before you do it. Do you ever talk about a show and then have it come out completely different?
Oh, many times something would happen in the first few minutes of the show that would completely
knock it off,
completely change. Mm-hmm. But
do you remember any particular stories, any funny ones?
Oh, there were. I'm sure there were many. I would be. We had one.
It was already thinking about it.
It was wild. Beulah Witch had been invited to go up to the Lincoln Park Zoo and correlate all the Halloween activities of all the animals up there. Marlon Perkins was at Lincoln Park at that mm-hmm. time, and he invited her, and they took pictures, and there was a whole center spread in the Sunday paper of Beulah Witch with this one and that one in the zoo. So Beulah thought it was only right to extend an invitation to Marlon to bring one of his friends from the zoo and come down and be with us. Mm-hmm. But, of course, she never told us about that, so we really didn't know about it. Well, Burr knew, and he told me that Marlon Perkins was going to come down and bring somebody from the zoo. And I said, well, let's just see who he brings, because he's a great one for snakes, and if he'd bring a snake down, just figure that I won't be here that day. He said, no, he wouldn't do anything like that. I said, well, he might. Just tell him that I cannot stand that. So he brought down a little skunk whose name was Sweet William. And so when Marlon came down with the little thing, I said to Bert, I just don't want to be near him. Burr said, he's just beautiful, Fran. He's just beautiful. He doesn't smell. I said, well, he does to me, because I just, if he's a skunk, then I just know he has to smell. Well, I guess he didn't. I don't think he did. Anyway, he wasn't any happier to be there than I was to have him. And so the way the show worked, Kukla and I were there at the beginning of the show, and the doorbell rang, and it was Marlon Perkins. So I asked him to make himself comfortable, and I went in and I said, Kukla, Beulah has invited Marlon Perkins to come and be on the show and bring a friend. And he said, well, where is Beulah? I said, I haven't seen her. I haven't seen her all day. He said, well, go and see if you can get Marlon a cup of tea or something. So I'd go out and I would say, Mr. Perkins, could I get you anything? Would you have a cup of tea or glass of milk?
No. How did all this, did they pan or would you have a big set?
My voice would just be, you wouldn't see, only you just stayed right with the stage.
I see.
So Kukla, I guess, had to do a commercial. He was going to do it, start it by himself anyway. And I was sitting over on the side with Marlon, and the skunk is down on the floor. He has a little leash on him, and he made a grab at my ankle, and I was jumped 6 feet in the air. And so then I'd go back in, and I'd talk to Kukla. He'd said, well, see if you can't find Beulah. I said, I can't find her. I don't know where to look. Well, it went on and on and on. So finally, Kukla said, well, let's just bring Marlon in with his friend, and we'll just go on and make him feel welcome. Well, we brought Marlon in. He put the little skunk up on the stage. And I was talking with him, you know, small talk, just nothing. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I looked and I saw blood running down Marlon's wrist. And that darn skunk had bitten him. Now Marlon is trying to get him off, and he won't leave the stage. He's digging into the stage, and then he went to the bathroom, all over the front of the stage. And I had a string of big beads. I'm leaving. I just left. I just walked out of the picture. And
I think I lost something about those beads.
Well, they just broke. I just did like this, and away went the beads. It just flew. So Kukla looked over and he said, Jack, and Jack said, don't look at me. Oh, what precipitated this thing was, we were talking, Marlon and Kukla and I, and Beulah came in with this wild-looking hat on and said, well, Marlon, baby, I think it scared the skunk. I think she really scared him. That's what happened. Then Beulah flew out and left Kukla. We just all deserted, and he had his little mop, and he came up, and he's mopping the stage, and he said, well, it happens in the best of regulated families. And just that day, on the front page of all newspapers, because it was a, I don't know if it was a UPI release or what, but anyway, Margaret Truman had said that ours was her favorite television show. And he said, to think of all days Margaret Truman would say, this is our favorite show. Mm-hmm. Well, he's still mopping up. And all of a sudden, Ollie came in. And he said, well, anything happened while I was gone? Oh, it was awful. We finally all got together again, signed the show off. Well, the switchboard lit up like crazy. It made it was a front page item the next day in all the papers. Not to be believed.
And so all of this is just you and Burr.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of things going on. I guess it's just a lot of quick minds happening.
Well, just
geniuses at work.
Works out.
Did you ever meet Margaret Truman?
Oh, yes. When we went to New York, she used to come over to our rehearsals and stay and see the show, and the Secret Service men would be there.
Really?
And the actors and actresses would come. And Burr always loved it. I was in such awe of them. It scared me to death.
Can you mention some of those fans?
Oh, yes. Yul Brynner used to come over when he was doing The King and I originally.
Yes.
He'd come over to our rehearsal, then he'd go back to the theater, put on his makeup, and watch the show.
It's
every day.
It's interesting to see who appreciates it.
Dorothy and Lillian Gish came to be great friends. Faye Emerson was a great fan. Tallulah Bankhead used to call us every night after the show, and came over when we were in New York, was there every day.
That's great.
Dolores,
heard of her being on Captain Kangaroo. Yeah.
And Dolores, Ollie's little cousin, was named for Tallulah, because she thought it would be, she named Dolores, and then bought a little dog and named it Dolores. And let me see, Robert Sherwood, great writer, was it? Wrote us some beautiful letters, and I'm trying to think of the name. I'm so sorry, I can't think. June Lassie's mother. Now tell me who I'm talking about. That awful.
Jan Clayton?
No. June. Her father was a great actor. There were so many would come through. When they'd come through Chicago, they'd come over. Deborah Carr, when she was there. Hedda Hopper was a great admirer. And, so many people.
Now, did you ever appear with the puppets on a different children's program? I mean, did you ever come visit another program?
I don't think we ever did. I don't think we ever did. I'm sure we didn't.
Did you make a lot of personal appearances?
We did a good many, yes.
Was that like shopping centers or?
Well, we did a few of those. We did hospital shows. Mm-hmm. We did a concert in Town Hall in New York. On Thanksgiving night, which is notoriously a bad night in show business, and we played the standing room, and it was a great thrill, wonderful.
What was the largest audience that you ever performed, live audience, you think?
I would think probably that one was. I would. That would be my guess.
What do you do with your time off the show? I mean, what do you like to do? Are you a sporting person that likes to take trips, or
Well, I'm not exactly that. I have many interests. The last couple of years, my husband was very ill and died in April. So since I've been out here, I've done really nothing. I have done some work, but not very much. I just couldn't. Nor did I really want to, because I was more needed here. I hope to do a little more. I did some work yesterday.
Have you ever had any children along the way?
I lost a child. I have all the children in the world, though, on this street, and they're here mm-hmm. all the time. And for that, I'm most grateful.
What was it like to move into this neighborhood? Did your neighbors...
They were just wonderful. Little boy came. I'll show you. He came the first day I was here, and he hasn't missed a day since then. That's a little girl down the street.
He comes every day?
Every day. And these are...
Those are your local fans.
These are my kids. They're here all the time. I'm going to his graduation tomorrow. And there's a little girl across the street. Two other ones down.
I kind of wonder what happens when the local elementary school hears that you're a neighbor.
Well, the kids come, they're in all sizes, and the boys have been just great.
What do they like to talk about when they see you?
Oh, we talk about many things.
They don't question you like I do. They
don't. Oh no. I was doing an interview here one day, and the five of them came, and so I said, "Well, I'm doing an interview now, and if you want to, we're doing it out there." Mm-hmm. And I said, "If you want to sit down and be very quiet, you may stay. Otherwise, come back a little later." So then we'd be quiet. So they sat down, and so the gentleman had asked me a good many things, and finally he said, "Fran, I didn't ask you this before," he said, "but you know, this is for a Catholic newspaper." He said, "You've never been married before," and before I could answer, David said, "Of course not. Fran is a one-man woman." But they're very dear, and they, on Valentine's Day, I got a few Valentines that came from the store, but for the most part they made them for
That's
me
nice.
And
nice.
Wrote special little messages, and at Christmas time they all came and brought some things, and they're a great help. They keep me from being lonely.
Tell me, in the heyday of Kukla, Fran and Ollie, was there a lot of fan mail coming in?
Oh, we used to get 10,000 to 12,000 letters a week.
Mm-hmm. And what were they? What were the letters like?
Well, there were all kinds. There's a lady in an unpronounceable town in New York. Her name is Helen Coppins. From the very first year that the show went on cable, so that it was networked, you know, she has sent a card to whichever one of the Kuklapalton characters would be identified with a holiday, like Beulah Witch at Halloween, Kukla and Ollie and Fran always at Christmas time, Fletcher Rabbit at Easter time. And to this day, I get the cards. They come to me, and then I just shoot them on to Burr so he could just see them. And there was one time in the show when Kukla was a little concerned because people had written in, and they'd say, "Well, what is Kukla? Who is Kukla? What is Kukla?" And he said, "The who doesn't bother me as much as the what." And he said, "Ollie knows that he's a dragon, and Fletcher knows that he's a rabbit, and you're a girl, and Madame Ogopus is a lady. But I always have been, I think." And so Ollie and I would try to make him feel that it didn't make any difference, that we knew who he was, and were don't know what we would and didn't know what we would do if he weren't there. And finally, a letter came from a little girl, and she said, "Dear Kukla, we don't want you to be sad, because you don't know what you are, because my mother says you're a blessing. And Burr loved it, and we read it on the air. And that satisfied Kukla. Yes, he was very happy to know that. And they would draw pictures and send pictures, their idea of what we looked like. I always had yellow hair with long, real curly Q hair. And we got one picture. I hope Burr still has it. It was so wonderful. It came from a monastery somewhere in the East, and it showed the monks sitting around the long robes, and and on the television screen was Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. Mm-hmm. And then just beautiful letters. And when we came back on the public television series, the letters that came in were really love letters, and they weren't only from young women who said that they had watched us when they were children, and they were now enjoying the show again with their children. But young men wrote. Really, the letters were just beautiful. And they always were. And we are very grateful for a beautiful press, which we enjoyed from the very beginning. So many wonderful stories.
Yeah, where I always hear PTA, I'm going to be interviewing the people of the PTA, the members of the board, I guess. I haven't approached them yet, but I'm going to contact someone to ask how they feel, what their stand is right now on children's television. But so many programs are knocked, and I'm sure your program never was.
No, not certainly that I ever knew about. And we had a letter from a girl who was going to a University of Indiana, and she said how happy she was that we were back. And she said, Kukla and Ollie and you, Fran, never taught me to spell, to read, or to count, but you taught me something ever so much more valuable. You taught me how to love. And I was so pleased that she thought of it in that manner.
Can you briefly touch upon the awards that the show has received through the years?
Well, Peabody Award, Emmys, and...
Were you ever shocked, or did you say, well...
Well,
with the response,
we were very... No, we were very, very grateful for them. And, and there were, we got a Look Award one time. And I had a big story in Collier's Magazine, which at that time was a great magazine, and the American Magazine, which at that time was a very popular thing, and the story of Lily originally came out in the Saturday Evening Post by Paul Gallico, and it was a double spread, color pictures of this little puppet stage, and even to the little inky, which was right over my head, and the girl in the thing, her name was Franilla. And the story opened with at 7 o'clock on the eastern seaboard, the lights went down and the television thing was turned on. It was about our show, written that way, with the pictures, the one character is exactly like Madame Ogilpuss.
Is that the movie where where they do a puppet show and there's a song, sure. Hi Lily, Hi Lily, I have that record.
Right.
Yeah, I have that record.
And Burr took a rather dim view of it because the puppeteer was a rather warped individual who wasn't kind and didn't have a view on life that was anything like the way Burr felt about things. So the story was changed, of course, but that was the way it originally came out.
I think that's probably why Burr latched onto you, is that you do have that softness about yourself.
Well, we we just work so well together. I love him very dearly.
Can you think of anything we didn't touch upon yet that you'd like to?
I haven't. I don't like to talk about other programs per se. I would say this, that I just wish they would do more for children from a whimsical point of view, not the science fiction bit, and not the noisy kind of slam bang. I notice when the children, now they all have, I suppose, 5 or 6 television sets of their own in their own homes,
right.
But they will come here to sit with me and to watch, and that really is not my cup of tea, the cartoon bit. But anyway, and there are some that are lovely. Now, I did some pilots.
You mean they come over here and watch cartoons?
Sure. In the afternoon, you know, unless I say, no, this is my time, and sorry. I have noticed that if whatever they're watching, if it's quiet and a gentle sort of thing, they then are quiet. But the minute there is noise and bang and funny zooms and things like that, then they hit each other on the head. Oh, not to hurt each other, I mean, but it's just that pushing and shoving, and they're not quiet. So I said, well, then we don't watch. We just don't watch. And the CBS Children's Film Festival, until this year, was an hour a weekly show.
Beautiful
and
films.
They were beautiful film. Now they've gone to half hour ones, and I've done the voice over for them, but I just haven't been as thrilled about them as I was in the early part of the series, because there were such beautiful stories, and they taught children a great deal by letting children here know how children in other countries live. There were beautiful stories about animals and about the proper care of animals. Not meant to teach a lesson, but they did teach a lesson because they showed so well what should be done. And I know that there's a big hue and cry now about commercials in children's programs. And I think many of them are in fault, particularly in the toy end of it, where a child sees a toy, and they're not inexpensive, and not all children will ever have that toy, because it just wouldn't be possible for their parents to give them that. That's a shame. I know the commercials are very necessary because the cost is great, and something has to pay for the production. But
they can advertise grapes.
I think that the content of the commercial message should be very carefully screened. And that's just about all. It's been fun talking to you, Paul.
Okay, but before we just wrap it up, back to your home life. Do you like to read a lot?
I read a great deal.
Do you watch
deal.
Television a lot?
I
do
watch
the movies.
I watch
parties?
Television. I saw 2 movies, the first movies I've seen in 2 years, because I haven't been anywhere. I'm a great crossword puzzle and double crossing. I'm an addict as far as that goes. And I do needlepoint, and I knit, and I love to cook, and that is just about it.
Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.